It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. It was less than 2 weeks ago that a drone was seen flying around PNC Park during the late innings of a Pirates game. The drone's appearance caused such a stir that the Federal Aviation Administration launched an investigation. In a statement, the FAA said, quote, "Flying model aircraft solely for hobby, for recreational reasons, does not require FAA approval, but hobbyists must operate according to the agency's model aircraft guidance and the rules in the 2012 FAA reauthorization law," end quote. It appears that drones will continue to intrude on our lives, but drones may also be a benefit to us. I'm joined now by an expert on drones, Carnegie Mellon University Professor of Robotics, Dr. Ila Norbosch. Dr. Norbosch, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Paul.
Let's begin with the basics here. How would you define a drone?
The easiest way to define a drone today are machines that provide a lot of the flying intelligence that it used to be a remote control operator would provide with their fingers. So these drones, you tell them roughly where to go, they take care of the details, and so they're somewhat autonomous. They can go there even if you're not a pilot, even if you're not seasoned with the ability to fly, and very often these drones have cameras on them. So they become a virtual eye in the sky, able to look down upon you from the third dimension.
What is the difference between a drone and a remote control toy helicopter with a camera, which have been around for years?
One biggest difference between those two categories is price. Remote control helicopters that flew well often cost thousands of dollars when I was a kid, and they almost never had a camera. Drones, on the other hand, can literally be had for $100 or less nowadays. You can get a really fancy setup for $1,000 or so, and anybody can fly it. So it's cultural. The difference is that helicopter was available to a few people who trained really hard, and so it simply didn't impinge upon all of us in the way that drones do. Drones are so simple that you could go buy one tomorrow, and then you can fly over your neighbor's homes and start snapping pictures of them without any prior training.
There's been a sort of ready or not, here they come aspect to the sudden appearance of drones in Pittsburgh. And maybe they've been around longer than we realize. But are we prepared for drones in this town, do you think?
I think we're not at all prepared for drones. We're really not at the leading edge of that. I think the West Coast takes the cake for having a whole lot of drones already. But we're not ready for this because culturally we don't know how to deal with these small flying insects, these robots. They're loud, first of all, and people need to understand that. They sound sort of like a leaf blower in the sky. So when you hear, for instance, the CEO of a drone company say that her dream is that the drone will deliver water to her when she's halfway done with her run, you can start thinking about what that means. You know, 50 drones in the sky over Frick Park is 50 leaf blowers in the sky. We're not ready for that noise pollution. And the other aspect of it is because drones aren't official, because they're not simply owned by governments and companies, but also by people. When we look up and see one hovering, we really have no idea if it's legitimate and what purpose it's there for. And that's just a big looking glass question that we face now and that we don't have any easy answers to.
We're talking drones in Pittsburgh with CMU professor Dr. Ila Norbosch. You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. The email address, esspgh@wesa.fm, and on Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive. Do you see drones as an intrusion or a benefit in our lives? 412-246-2002 to join us. And Dr. Norbosch, drones have reportedly, as I mentioned at the outset, flown around the ballpark, near the ballpark for quite some time now. What do you know about the one that hovered over PNC Park during the June 26th Pirates game?
I don't know which model that was, but I can describe probably how the person who was flying it was flying it. They probably had a small controller that allows them to adjust the altitude of the drone and the position, and they had a little heads-up display, a little LCD screen connected to the controller that lets them see basically from the drone's point of view down. And usually they can snap some pictures that they can send to their cell phone and look at later. So it's really like an eye in the sky that's under the control of one person, probably pretty small. It was probably smaller than 1 meter in diameter.
And reportedly the person operating it was on the Riverwalk when the Pirates noticed this late in the game. It was during the eighth inning or so. They called police. Police told this individual to stop to cease and desist, basically, and he complied with their request. There are understandably security concerns at sports stadiums. Fans everywhere have to go through metal detectors. It's no different at PNC Park. What kind of security concerns should drones be raising for organizations like the Pirates, especially when, as was the case on June 26th, they don't know who is flying it and what their intentions are?
That's right. You know, one of the challenges is the FAA's rules around drones are relatively weak. If you think about the remote control airplane rules that they were referring to in the statement that you described at the beginning of this, that's really about visual contact. A remote control airplane's pilot is always supposed to be able to see his airplane. But that's a pretty weak statement. You know, you can be pretty far away and still see your drone as a little speck in the sky there. What's even more challenging is going to be autonomy. You know, when you can give waypoints to these drones, and this is coming, it's actually already here, so that you're sitting in your home, and that drone is a disposable drone, and it's over PNC Park, the police can't come over to you on the Riverwalk and ask you to cease and desist. You're unreachable. And that's where we're headed, is a world in which drones can be remotely operated. And so the security we have, even in terms of line of sight, is really gone at that point.
Again, our number to join the conversation, 412-246-2002, email ESSPGH at WESA.FM, and on Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive. We have this tweet from Nettie P., who says that in response to our question, do you see drones as an intrusion or a benefit in our lives, she responds, no more than every cell phone having a camera. What are your thoughts about that response, Dr. Norbosch?
No more than every cell phone having a camera and being able to float around far away from your body. It's interesting, when Google Glass came out, one of the concerns people had was you don't know when it's taking a picture. With a cell phone, it's kind of obvious when somebody's taking a picture, and people get in trouble when they take pictures with a cell phone secretly. In fact, in some countries, like Korea, cell phones have to make a clicking sound when you take a picture so that it's never secret. With a drone, it's like that camera being out in the world, and you have no idea what it's looking at. You don't know where its camera is pointed, and you don't know if it's zooming in and if it's taking photos. So if you're okay with that, then you're okay with drones. Now, I have to say, there is a good side to drones. We're making them out to be evil monsters, but of course, we the people are making the decisions here. I've seen students at a local school outfit a drone with VOC sensors and fly around fracking sites in Pennsylvania to measure how much methane is being off-gassed. I've seen farmers use drones to actually map their land in a far more efficient way than with a helicopter or an airplane. So, of course, drones have very positive uses as well.
So you see positive uses already for drones in a city like Pittsburgh?
Absolutely. They can empower people. Because they're so low cost, if you use them for good, they can enable people who never would have been able to afford to get up in the air to be able to measure something, to be able to see, for instance, how urban development is changing the forest and changing, you know, where wildlife can go in the city. The problem is, because they're so low cost, massive number of people can use them for any purpose. It's kind of like the Wild West on the Internet, when we started the Internet and we had all sorts of crazy sites. But that was limited to your computer. Now we have this Wild West I call robot smog in our skies. And it's not just in our computer anymore, it's in our physical world.
412-246-2002 to join the conversation with Dr. Ela Norbosch of CMU, and we have Cole in Pittsburgh on the line. Cole, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. I'm curious about drones and if drones start to become regulated or kind of policed, would that be done by other drones, do you think?
Interesting question.
It's a really interesting question. I think there's a company idea in there for somebody somewhere to sell special anti-drone drones to the police departments around the country. I suspect that one way of regulating drones would be to require that the companies that make drones have some authentication and some signal ID online so that when a drone is flying, the police can always interrogate the drone, find out who's flying it and where they're located, kind of like a GPS for drones, for the operator of the drone. We don't really have anything like that in the standards for drones. Right now, they're just using standard communication lines. But that would be the first step, I imagine, is some kind of electronic technique.
Yeah, and I have one extra question, if that's all right.
Sure.
I'm curious as far as the safety issue, drones being in the air high above, regardless of the size, what are the safety considerations as far as them falling or user error you know, causing them to fall into a park or into an intersection or whatever?
Another good question, Cole.
There was a study that was done through the Freedom of Information Act on Department of Defense drones, you know, big ones even, in America. And this came out, I think, in the Washington Post about a week ago. And it was fascinating because there were just hundreds and hundreds of cases of unmanned aircraft falling out of the sky in America. One hit the roof of a school. One was the size of a 737 and nearly hit a school. So we already have a clear record of these aircraft failing just like manned aircraft. And indeed, with drones, they fall all the time. Now, they're small and relatively light, but they have very fast spinning propellers that can do quite a bit of damage to a human or an animal. And they will fall. And the more there are, the more the statistics will pile up, and we'll see drones that damage a car, and then, you know, we'll find out if State Farm covers drone damage or not, which we just don't know yet.
Cole, thank you for the phone call. We appreciate it. 412-246-2002, the number to call to get in on the conversation about drones with CMU Professor of Robotics, Dr. Ela Norbosch. And as long as we've brought up the subject of police using drones, do we know for a fact that police are using drones? And if so, shouldn't they need a warrant?
An excellent question. There's two or three interrelated issues here. One is, are drones being weaponized? And the simple answer to that is yes. In fact, South Africa has a company that just started selling drones with tasers on board for crowd control, literally, to companies.
Wow.
Not even to just police stations, to companies. And so that depressing sort of reality is already imminent. Now, the question of warrants is really complicated and interesting. There was a story about this a couple of years ago where Los Angeles bought a drone and started testing it. They flew it over somebody's house in Los Angeles. If I get the story right, what happened is they actually saw down onto the house, they saw a marijuana garden. Now, there were high walls around the house, so technically police on the street would have needed a warrant to go in the house. But the police were flying this drone over the house, and this guy didn't have a roof on the building because police are usually on the street. And so they arrested him, and he sued saying that he had a reasonable right to privacy, and they would have had to have a warrant because normally you can't see from above. In fact, the police won, and what the court said is the fact that drones are now available cheaply means that we should assume that they'll be available broadly, and therefore, reasonable right to privacy doesn't hold if you have high walls. You'd have to have a roof also.
Well, this speaks to one of the concerns that you've expressed. How does the drone's physical position of superiority impact us? It's flying overhead. It's out of reach. There's nothing we can really do about it. We can't reach up and swat it away if we see one near us.
It's a power relationship problem. And what's interesting is if you think about everything that flies overhead right now, we know what it's for. We see a news copter, we know what it's doing. We see a medevac copter here in the Oakland area, we always know what it's up to. And when we see airplanes, we know what they're doing. It's a either one of the refueling flights that the Coast Guard has, or it's a commercial flight into Pittsburgh Airport. So we have a very good model in our heads when we look up of things above our heads and what they're up to. With drones, this blows us all out of the sky, because all the news stations will eventually start using drones and give up on the helicopters because they're far cheaper to operate. But you won't just see the news station drone. And these things are too small to be signed, so you won't see a graffiti, an icon on the side. So you're going to see these things and for the first time have flying creatures where we don't know their provenance, we don't know their legitimacy, we don't know their overall goals, we don't know whether they're trying to sell pictures of us. And that places us in a new kind of position that we'll see elsewhere in our world, which is one in which technology is going to make the world around us more ambiguous. When we see a robot on the sidewalk eventually, we're not going to know if somebody's remote controlling it or if it's an autonomous robot. When we see a car on the road, we won't know, is somebody driving it? Or is it running an errand for an owner who's not even in the car? That means we're building up this new kind of anxiety around uncertainty around ourselves, and that puts us at the bottom of the power relationship.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we're talking with Dr. Ela Norbosch. He is a professor of robotics at CMU. You can join the conversation with your comments and questions at 412-246-2002, 412-246-2002. Do you see drones as an intrusion or a benefit in our lives? You can email us at ESSPGH@WESA.FM, on Twitter at ESSPGH, #EPLive. You say clearly that there is a lack of fundamental transparency when it comes to drones. So, Dr. Norbosch, how do we create more transparency? What do we have to do?
It's an interesting question. I mean, these things are physically small. You know, the Defense Department is even working on a hummingbird-sized drone that it's supposed to be hard to distinguish from a real hummingbird. So we're going in the direction where visually it's not going to cut it. We're not going to be able to see a logo. We're not even going to know in some cases whether it's a drone or a bird, as ridiculous as that sounds today. So that transparency has to come through standards. We have to have a way of interrogating these machines, and these machines in turn have to have a way of telling us what's up, what they're doing, and why they're there. Probably that means interconnection, a kind of mesh between the drones and our mobile devices, so that our cell phones become a window into us understanding the other technology around us. I'd love to be able to point my cell phone at the future autonomous car and understand its intentions, point it at a drone above my head and understand, oh, it's making a delivery to me from Amazon.
Will there be laws regulating where drones can be used? And what happens if we fail to regulate drones? Is there a chance that this can be a genie out of the bottle that gets out of control?
Well, we're certainly going to start seeing in rural areas people shooting drones down. It's an obvious step that we'll have in people deciding to defend themselves because they have so much uncertainty about the drones. What's interesting is, generally speaking, law runs behind technology. Technology accelerates so much more rapidly that it's hard for law to keep up. Even if you look at self-driving cars, law really doesn't know what to do with these things, and the technology is almost ready to start popping them out. Drones are the same way, but they're even easier because you're not dealing with street rules. So it's likely that law is reflexive. We're going to have bad incidents, and then the law will respond with some, you know, pendulum swing. And then technology will again leapfrog and do something that the law didn't think about. So unfortunately, law is probably not going to save us. I think we need standards and we need transparency, and that probably means public discourse. We need a way to stop all drone companies from simply making machines that can do whatever they want without any transparency.
412-246-2002 to join our conversation about drones. Let's go to Owen in Aspinwall. Owen, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, thanks for having me on the show.
You bet.
One really minor point, which actually probably is not the high priority on what we're talking about, but a possible temporary solution would be to adjust zoning so that the parcels that usually were terrestrial are now to a certain height. That can work with trespassing laws, and possibly help to enforce drones from being in particular areas. So that's it. I'll listen to your comments.
That's a really good point. The FAA has interesting rules around flying. If you're flying a fixed-wing aircraft, regular airplane with wings, I believe the rule is you have to be at least 500 feet above ground level in rural areas and something like 2,000 feet above ground level in dense areas, population dense areas like Pittsburgh. So they have explicit rules about altitude control. And if you're going to go below that, you have to have clearance from the FAA. Those kinds of rules are interesting to think about applying to the case of drones. And if done right, I agree with Owen, that's actually a nice idea to keep drones at least further away from us. It's an arms race, though, because, of course, the zoom cameras and the optics on these drones are getting better and better. So you can make that limit whatever you want. 3 years later, people can still make out your license plate, the name on the package, on the UPS package at your front door from 2,000 feet up.
412-246-2002. Let's go to Rich in South Hills. Rich, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
How you doing?
Quite well, thank you. Go ahead with your comment or question.
I'm a pro-drone guy, and I'm a military pilot. And I see it with judicious use of drones. Of course, regulations are being put in place with the FAA and a lot of other things that right now. But whenever this happens, a person will first off think about this. Any aircraft, you're sending an aircraft in to bomb a place rather than a drone. Those aircraft are worth multi-million dollars, some of them close to half a billion. There's almost no aircraft that's not worth about $30 million right now. The training of the pilots runs into the millions as well. So why would you jeopardize that expense and the health and safety of a pilot because somebody doesn't like a drone in particular? An aircraft that's going in and on a bombing run somewhere he doesn't know exactly who is going to be there. So it's always intelligence on the ground that's going to be paramount. But in that case, you know, they're very good. And I'm very pro-drone in that aspect. We have a military that's all volunteer now. You know, was not whenever I first got in. You know, you get drafted, and, I think a lot of the government people, people in Congress, if there was a, they'd think more about starting wars that have no basis if indeed their kids were subject to the draft.
Well, all right, Rich, let me jump in. Rich is a military pilot, he says, and speaking for the pro-drone crowd, what about the pro-drone argument, Dr. Norbosch?
Well, I think it's very important, and I think Rich's point is well taken, that you're not putting the pilot in as much risk when a military assault is performed with a drone rather than with a manned aircraft. Of course, the question of domestic drones is really very different from the question of the military use of drones. I hope when we talk about military use of drones, we're talking about offshore use. And there's lots of dynamics there. That would be a whole hour program on
right.
The question of weaponizing robots for military use. Domestically, the problem is the domestic culture isn't nearly as highly regulated as a military institution. So the question is, what do we do with drones here in America? Do we allow people, for instance, to put weapons on them? If you have a deer hunting license, can you put a gun on your drone in 4 years and go deer hunting by drone? I've heard talk about that in New Zealand for sheep hunting, in fact. So we have to face this problem domestically, whether or not the military decides to take on drones in lieu of manned aircraft. And unfortunately, what the military does in this case doesn't really help guide us when we think about the culture of an urban area like Pittsburgh.
So we're just about to time for the segment, but I would ask you as a final question, in what ways are we, with these drones, entering into ethically questionable areas?
We're redefining the relationship that we people have with each other through an intermediary, which is technology, robot technology. And this is really changing us. And we're entering into this world where we're often going to be interacting with robots, with technologies, instead of with people. And we have to ask ourselves, how are we going to stay human? How will we not dehumanize ourselves when we spend ever greater amounts of our time interacting with, worrying about, and staring at technology rather than somebody's face?
Our guest has been CMU Professor of Robotics, Dr. Ila Norbosch, talking about drones. Dr. Norbosch, we really appreciate your expertise, your insights, and your thoughts about drones. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Paul.
Coming up, we'll explore the lingering allure of George and Ira Gershwin's Summertime. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.